Walking Dead Season 6 is over, but we are just getting started here on The Walking Dead Live on Post Show Recaps. And now, here are the two guys who hate Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe. I am Rob Sestrino. Here is Josh Wigler. Let's meet the man.
I don't want to say that I have anything against Moe. I think Moe is pretty decent. I'm not a big fan of Eeny or Miny. Stop whistling. This is creeping me out.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah. That's what you do before you beat me in the face with your loose seal.
With the microphone. That's what. My Negan move.
Microphone wrapped in barbed wire?
Yes, yes. No, it's wrapped in an XLR cable.
It's wrapped in a frayed cord.
Yeah.
So all of, like, the little metal bits are coming out.
Yeah, you get electrocuted. All right.
That's not a terrible post-apocalypse weapon, you know? It's like kind of like a hand Lucille.
Yeah, I think you could really, like, whip around some of these microphones.
Yeah,
just, like,
you could do some damage, man. I think we're onto something. We might not be as screwed as we thought.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Anyway, so we got a lot to talk about here tonight, Josh. Because how about that ending?
Riveting stuff.
Yes.
Really great.
Yes. All right, and sometime in the next 6 months to 2 years, we will find out who Negan killed off tonight on The Walking Dead. This is exciting. We're getting somewhere.
It's exciting, and I don't want to get anyone's hopes up, but I did happen to look into the eyes of the victim tonight, and they changed color.
Color.
Think that person's going to be okay. Yeah, okay. I think that person's going to make it.
Okay. No, in all seriousness, this was you were just so tense the whole way through, and, you know, Rick is, like, trying to get somewhere, and he desperately wants to get somewhere. He knows where he wants to be, and he's trying to get to where he's trying to go. And every time he thinks he's going to get to where he's going to go, roadblock, go backwards.
He just has to keep backing it up. Reverse.
Right.
He's doing the cha-cha slide all over this episode.
And I can totally identify with Rick and everybody in the Winnebago, because that is my feeling in watching Season 6 of The Walking Dead, Josh.
Oh, man. I was going to say, do you think that the Winnebago reversing was like a metaphor for the creators of the show?
Yes,
being like, I wish we could back this up.
Whoa. Where do you guys think you're going? You think you're getting something? Come back here. Get back here.
We went down the wrong path.
Back it up.
No. Yeah, man. I mean, look, there's definitely great stuff that we could talk about from this episode. There was fun stuff as well. Elephant in the room. Something dumpster fire, you know, and I think that that's been the response from a lot of people. I'm just looking at my Twitter feed and I'm getting bombarded with people who are really upset with how that ended. So it seems to me to be the consensus that a lot of people are thumbs down on that end.
I know a lot of people are. I mean, and they have to expect this is going to be the case. I'm not.
Who's going to be pumped about
that?
Like, who's going to be pumped about this awful cliffhanger that we now have to live through for the next 6 months? How could they ever think, like, we're going to not tell people who, like, which fan favorite character got their face bashed in until October, and they are going to love it. They are going to be so psyched about that.
Right.
You know, who thinks that?
You know, it's sort of like, whatever, you know, I'm not that angry about it. I was more mad about the Glenn thing. That was really like, sort of like a really, this is so much like, of course, this is what they did.
Right. Yeah.
But let me just tell you, so now that that's out of the way, let me tell you why I really don't like that they did this.
Okay.
Because here's why this is going to, because that starting from tomorrow on through October, basically, I mean, today is April 3rd.
Yeah.
Now, for the next 7.5 months until The Walking Dead comes back in October, as I get the math right now, it's only 6.5 months. 6.5 months until The Walking Dead comes back in October, there's going to be a million articles of this is why the person that died is blank, is so-and-so.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to get it completely ruined where, you know, people, it'll either leak out or people will figure it out. And
Snooki is going to reveal it.
Snooki will tell us. And so we'll all be sitting there in October and we'll say, okay, so so-and-so turned out to be the person just as we expected that Negan ended up killing off. And that's it.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that, we live in an age right now where I don't think that you can really get away with this, especially with a show that's this big. It does not get bigger than The Walking Dead unless it's arguably Game of Thrones. And Game of Thrones, without getting into spoilers on that show, had a similar, level of event. that closed out its fifth season, and it's still like the only thing that people talk about when it comes to Game of Thrones, which I, you know, cover for a living, and I write about it a lot, and I'm sure that it's aggravating for people, and it will absolutely be that way with The Walking Dead. You're right on the money. I don't write about the show anymore, but if I were writing about the show, I guarantee you that I'd be writing at least like 15 different articles about why is it Abraham? Why is it Sasha? It's going to be Rick. They're going to blow our minds. You know, like there are going to be literally like thousands of articles about this that are just going to keep coming out. And eventually some spy picture or something or other, or some actor joining another show, or, you know, take your pick. It's right. going to come out. We're going to figure it out. And by that point, are we going to care anymore? I don't know. It's, you know, I think that it was, for a lot of reasons, I think it was a bad call. I think it was a really bad choice to do it.
Because I don't know what you gain out of this. Like, let's just say, hypothetically, Negan kills off. Pick the person, Josh.
Yeah. Let's say, I don't know, Eugene.
Okay, Eugene. And it really did seem like the show was building towards Eugene was going to die tonight.
Sure.
It seemed like he said goodbye to a lot of the characters tonight. Yeah.
And he was at stage 10. And once you're at stage 10, you can't go up.
Stage
anymore.
10. That's right. Okay, so we come on tonight like, oh my God, what's going to happen next season on The Walking Dead with Negan? They killed off Eugene tonight. Oh my God, what a great episode. Everybody is just as excited for how are they going to get out of this jam. And it's nobody's cursing at the, you know, on their Twitter feed tonight. How could they do that? How could they just kill off Eugene and then just leave us hanging with how they're going to get out of that tough spot?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, this moment is iconic from the comics. You know, Negan's introduction is paired with him beating somebody to death with a barbed wire baseball bat. And it's insane. And it happens in a single issue and you see it all. There's no cliffhanger. The cliffhanger is like the emotional hollowness that you are feeling when you are done. Yeah, it's hollow. It will stay. When you are finished reading the issue, you want to like throw it across the room. It's like the Red Wedding. You know, you get to that chapter in the book, it plays out and you want to burn the book. You're so angry. I will never forget reading The Walking Dead 100. It was at San Diego Comic-Con. I believe it was 2012. I sat down as soon as I had landed from the plane and got into my office. I read the comic. I was floored. No one could speak to me for 2 hours. I was so upset because they show you everything. They play out the full scenario. Big piece of that emotional wallop, like the most important piece of the emotional wallop, is completely undercut tonight. It was just such a bad choice, and so many people are going to go and just like spoil themselves on the comic now. People are just like going to find out like, okay, so who died in the comic? And that's not necessarily who it's going to be on the show, and right. In fact, I bet it won't be the same person.
I agree.
But, you know, a lot of people, you know, and a lot of people already know that information. I'm redacting the name just out of respect for the people who don't know that. But it's basically common knowledge. Mm-hmm. And for the people that it's not common knowledge for, they're just going to go and read the wiki now and find out. Because why wait 7 months when that information is easily Googleable?
Yeah, so, I agree. And I don't know any of the comic book spoilers, but this is the one. I mean, this is the one big spoiler from the comic book of who Negan kills in the comic book. I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be the person that it is in the comic book. And for the sake of anybody listening to this podcast, I won't say who it is.
Don't need to name names. Don't need to name names. That would not be great. You know, it is a thing. It's out there. You can find it if you want. We'll definitely talk about it extensively in the Walking Dead book club podcast that I'm going to record with Jess this week. And spoiler alert, just from looking at Haymaker Hattie on Twitter, I don't think Jess liked this episode very much.
She'll get worked up sometimes.
She'll get worked up. It'll be a fun podcast. I'm really looking forward to talking to Jess.
So then with that in mind, before we get into some of the things that maybe we didn't love in the 90-minute finale, let's talk about the arrival of Negan. What'd you think of Negan on night one? It was billed as the greatest entrance any character would ever make into any TV show. Josh, did it live up to the hyperbole?
Who billed it that way? Who said that? I want to talk to that person.
I believe Andrew Lincoln said it.
Andrew Lincoln doesn't watch a ton of TV, I would imagine. Listen, it was great. It was very good. I actually thought that scene was awesome. I thought that Jeffrey Dean Morgan was great. He is a very intimidating, imposing figure as Negan. His dialogue in the comics is much more colorful and foul. And it's really, you know, it's laced with F-bombs and all sorts of horrible language. I believe that they filmed a version of it like that. That's going to be on the Blu-ray. We'll see how many people buy the Blu-ray after an ending like this. But I'm sure that scene, that alternate take, is going to be online. I was really missing that. But other than the swears, this was note for note from Walking Dead 100, pretty much. I mean, a little bit of story details were different because the way that we got to this moment on the show differs in some ways significantly from where we got in the comics. So, you know, he's reflecting a lot of that stuff, like, you killed a lot of my people, things like that. But otherwise, it was a really close cousin of what we got in the comic. And that was really cool to see come to life. It was really cool to see this iconic character that I've been waiting to meet for years now on the show. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan is a terrific actor, and that's great casting. And I'm very optimistic about what he's going to do now that he is a full-fledged part of the show. It's a real shame that it's undercut by this, you know, really, you know, wet fart of an ending.
Yeah. That quote from Andrew Lincoln, Negan makes the greatest entrance ever written. So that's, I guess, is that TV and film?
Ever written. So like books, plays,
sure.
Sonnets.
Yeah. Yeah. Not improvised scenes, but I guess best entrance ever written. No, but he really was great.
No scenes during the writer's strike.
Right. No. And, you know, certainly looking forward to seeing where this was going. And I got to say that Negan, he's billed also. We've seen the articles where they say he's the greatest TV villain that was ever, that has ever been on TV as well. I feel like that Negan, all in all, is being pretty fair to these guys. I mean, he's not even saying I'm going to kill everybody. He's just like, okay, I'm going to kill one person. And I think that's fair. I mean, you did kill, you know, like 35 of my people.
You killed dozens of my people. You killed, quote unquote, more people than I am comfortable with.
And I'll kill one of your people. And then you have to give me half of your stuff. I mean, it's basically like Negan is saying, you know what? I'm divorcing you. We're divorced now, and you're my ex-husband.
Yeah,
you're my ex-husband, and I get half. I get half,
but you also have to keep working for me. So it's like
it's exactly like getting divorced. Except, that's exactly what that's like.
Yeah, the walking divorce. I think a lot of people are thinking about that tonight. Yeah,
right. Right.
I think a lot of people are thinking about the breakup. Negan is coming across as a fairly level-headed guy. He has every reason in the universe to just kill all of these people.
Yeah.
You know, they're all lined up. How easy would it be to shoot every single one of them in a line? That's why Rick is as panicked as he is, because probably Rick is thinking there's no reason for this guy not to kill every single one of us. But Negan's a pretty good dude about it. He's pretty
chill. At his heart, he's a socialist, and that's good, right?
Yeah,
people like
bad.
That. It's big.
Yeah.
It's coming back.
What would Rick Grimes do in this situation? Rick Grimes would kill every single savior in that line.
Right.
So, you know, at least Negan's, you know, his bloodlust is a little bit less than Rick's so far.
So all in all, I thought that Negan is, other than we have to kill one of your people. But again, that seems very, very fair compared to what Rick and his group did to Negan's people. But I guess what they really underestimated, we tried to guess how many people are there in the saviors. Looked like a couple hundred. Yeah.
Lots of people. I think the thing about Negan, and this is something that the showrunner Scott Gimple has been talking about a lot in interviews, is that unlike a guy like the governor, who is a maniac, who is the type of person that would just turn on his own people in Woodbury and just spray them with bullets because somebody insulted him or he was just on the edge of losing his mind, a guy like Negan isn't going to do that. A guy like Negan is sane and rational. He's the main character of his own story. He views himself as a protagonist. He views himself as somebody who's doing practical, reasonable things in this post-apocalyptic world. And that's what makes him a dangerous guy when that's positioned against our heroes, when it's positioned against the people that we like. So that's why he's frightening, is that, you know, he's the type of person that gets you and I to come on the air and say, oh, that guy's not so bad.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's kind of scary. It's kind of scary. And I think that, you know, what would really drive the point home as to whether or not we're supposed to really, really hate this guy and be afraid of this guy is, you know, if we'd seen the face of the person who he just killed, that would make a big impact.
Right,
if he killed somebody that we really, really like.
You know who I'm a little annoyed with tonight?
What's that?
Jesus. Because don't you think it would have been like a solid
the guy?
Yeah. Because don't you think that would have been a solid for when they talked about how let's just go kill Negan. And if Jesus was just like, hey guys, he's got like 300 guys. I mean, you guys seem like you're really badass and everything, but it's like 300 saviors. I think you're a little outgunned here.
Kind of biting off more than you can chew.
Yeah.
And Rick has chewed on a throat before, so he's chewed a lot, and this is more than that.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to have gotten like the real 411 on this situation.
Scouting report. Sure.
What is happening here? Like, what are we getting into with the savior situation? But I think for a guy like Jesus and probably for Gregory, it's like, oh, you guys want to help out? Yeah, go for it. Give it a shot. you know, worst case scenario, you all die and Negan is more angry with you guys than us.
And what a bummer that Carol and Maggie killed off the only three women saviors a couple of weeks ago.
I know. It's like all of the dude bros are still around. Like everybody else in the Saviors is a guy.
Yeah, that one guy, Donnie and Primo, they were with them. And then that was it. That was the only women that they had in the Saviors.
Yeah. R.I.P. Paula, not Julia. R.I.P. Primo. I still miss Primo.
And Shell. Shell, don't forget Shell. Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about everything going on now with the mission to go and take Maggie to the hilltop.
You knew that this episode was on rocky ground to begin with when every important person in Alexandria leaves Alexandria during like a mission critical moment and they leave Father Gabriel in charge of the base.
Right, right.
Bad call.
It's a it is a really bad call. And I think that we're not even going to realize how bad that was until we spend the 90 minute premiere of The Walking Dead season 7 in Alexandria seeing the day that Father Gabriel had.
Oh my God, is that the episode? It's the 90-minute Father Gabriel episode?
Yes, from his perspective, what was going on there.
And then, when you say from his perspective, you mean literally from his point of view, the way that it was from the person
who's POV, see what was going on with him and Spencer. Do they find Enid? That's all going to be in the 90-minute premiere of Season 7 of The Walking Dead.
You just described like my nightmare scenario for television. Like that is the worst possible 90 minutes of TV that I can think of.
Well,
then, I don't want to see that.
All right. Well, that's going to be, you know, we'll get that started. Then episode 2 of season 7, got to see how it works out with Carol and Morgan. So we'll see Carol and Morgan on the road together, off with the guys in the armor. We're going to see where that goes.
Yeah, yeah. So you think that it's going to be episode 3 when we check back in with Rick and Negan and the same?
Oh no, 3 is all about back at the hilltop. What are they doing during all this?
And then 4 is the Tabitha the goat flashback.
right. So I think around the mid-season finale, we'll
getting
check back
close
in.
To Thanksgiving is where we're going to be. Yeah, yeah. So, oh man, what's amazing though, Rob, is that like this is a joke, but it's. You know, it's more real than it should be. Like there is a non-zero chance that the premiere will be about Morgan and Carol going and seeing the people that they hooked up with at the end of this episode. And there's no check-in whatsoever on the Rick situation. It's not impossible that that happens.
Yeah. Do you think anybody let Enid out of the closet?
No, that was the thing. I was surprised that that's not what she said to Carl. And she's like, Carl, what if you don't come back? What if no one ever finds me here in the closet? How do I get out?
JSS.
ASS, yeah.
ASS. So at any point, Josh, did it make sense to just bring Maggie back to Alexandria?
It probably made more
sense. I know that was cut off at some point, that decision.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they had to get to a point where they were walking her on a stretcher through the woods, like that felt like a real low point.
Well, it did seem like that at that point that, you know, the option to go all the way back to Alexandria was probably like, I feel like that was like maybe at the first time, the first point they ran into the roadblock.
Yeah. And not for nothing. I mean, we spent a decent amount of time on the Walking Dead feedback show last week, you know, really giving crap to the Saviors about how awful they've been and how easily disposed they are. They were well organized tonight. They got that together right quick. You know, they were blocking exits left and right. They were lifting huge logs in, you know, creating these gigantic lumber barriers left and right. It was really prolific, you know, trolling. No,
I really appreciate the hustle on the part of the Saviors to just really like, you know, get on the walkie, like, all right, set up the next roadblock 10 miles down the road. Let's bring in about, you know, 15 huge trees. Let's just cut them down, lay them all down flat. Let's get the construction gear in there. What do we need? A crane? Let's get the crane in here.
We'll
block the road. Okay, and then let's get that guy, let's throw him off the bridge, get that guy back in, fly him in.
It's like a haunted house. You know, I bet the Saviors would have a killer haunted house in the real world, like, because they, like, had, like, great dramatic timing with dropping that guy from the bridge.
Yeah.
It was really fantastic.
Well, it was a good thing that they spray-painted an X on that guy earlier in the episode, so then you knew at the end of the episode that it was that guy still. It wasn't a new, different guy.
Yeah, that's how you could tell. is the X. It marks the spot.
I mean, did I miss anything? Was there any other reason why they put an X on that guy?
I don't know. I mean, is it like, I don't know. You've been X'd out, bro. Is it like, I don't know. Whatever. Who cares? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, but
I don't know. Don't care. The Maggie thing, yeah, probably at a certain point, you know. But I think that that's the thing. And Rick is at a point where he was like, we'll beat them on our terms. You know, there's 16 of them right now. There's five of us. We can't take them. Let's back up. Let's back up the Winnebago. Let's go and figure it out. And we will kill them on our terms. And Rick has all the confidence in the world that he is capable of such things, that he is able to pull something like that off. He's always been able to pull it off in the past. It's what he says to Maggie in during the ride. He says, like, we've done this. We always do it. It's all of us all together, and we always keep going. So he really believes that it's like, you know, it's like a manifest destiny thing for him where they're always going to win. You know, you're screwing with the wrong people. And it turns out that Rick is the one who's screwing with the wrong people. And, you know, this comeuppance that we've been talking about, is there something on the way for Rick? Is Rick getting too arrogant? Is he getting too brash? Is he getting too overconfident? Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And he's got somebody killed as a result of it. So no good. No bueno, as Antonio Mazzara would say.
One of the common criticisms I've seen on Twitter is that there's been a lot of people saying they don't understand the actions of the characters. It seems as though the characters on this show are consistently making very dumb decisions. Do you feel like, is there enough motive behind the actions of what the characters are doing that it's not taking you out of the show right now?
Give me some examples. Like, who do you think is a prime example of somebody that is acting completely out of character?
Really starting in these last couple episodes, starting with Carol leaving in, you know, the middle of everything that's going on to everybody going after, to when then Denise had to go with Daryl and Rosita to go on that run, which caused Denise to die, even though she was the only doctor, to then Daryl going out to go avenge Denise, and then Rosita going again, and then Glenn going with them, and Michonne going to then this issue going on with Maggie, even though all these other people are already out, already leaving Alexandria completely defenseless with Father Gabriel in charge, and then taking anybody else who's left who's capable off on this other mission. Really, nobody seemed particularly concerned about Glenn, Glenn, Michonne, Daryl, like none of those people that didn't come back from the other mission, or Carol. Nobody really is worried about that, or Morgan, to then go on a different mission to go take everybody to the hilltop, to Rick bringing Carl with him on that mission, then, you know, bringing the only other, you know, Sasha, Abraham, Eugene on this other errand to go to the hilltop. Meanwhile, they know the saviors are out there. They already ran into saviors on the road. They know the saviors are also trying to invade Alexandria at the same time. They even brought Aaron in the Winnebago, for God's sakes.
I mean, I didn't expect when I asked for an example for you to like read the whole synopsis of the season. but I think that, you know, it's all fair examples. I think the Carol one is, you know, the one that you can really point to where a lot of this is out of character with Carol. And she had a moment tonight in the episode where she says something to the effect of like, you know, if you care about people, then they're going to get killed. And if you don't want to kill, then you stay away from people that you care about so you don't have to kill for anybody. But she's had to kill people since she's been away on the road already. So, like, her point has already been busted
In
her face. And she got stabbed in the midsection for it.
Yeah, Carol would have had to have killed zero people these last couple days if she stayed in Alexandria.
If she just goes to Rick and says, Rick, I'm tired. I really don't want to kill people anymore. I'm a pretty good baker. I'm decent with the cookies. Can I just stay on cookie patrol? Rick's probably going to be like, you're awesome at killing. Would love to have you involved. Oh, I hope if push comes to shove, you're in. But yeah, that's fine. I'm in on the acorn cookies. Yeah. Cookie patrol is on. Like, I think that that would work. So I don't know. Yeah, I think that that's a fair criticism. And I think that you can point it at a lot of things. And I think that the RV is a great example of everybody choosing to go and Rick being fine with everybody going. You know, granted, being on the road at this point in time on the show is dangerous because the saviors are patrolling everything. But leaving Alexandria unattended by anybody but Spencer Douche and Father Gabriel is also highly questionable. Yeah. So just questionable choices happening all over the place.
And I can't speak to Maggie's health, but I have to say, you know, and, you know, I feel terrible saying this, but I do think that the health of Maggie's unborn child at this point has really become a very low priority compared to the safety of every other person in the group. Like, it seems like for this, you know, very early, you know, very early on in this, in, I mean, how many months pregnant is Maggie? You know, this is, you know, in the post zombie apocalypse, this is, you know, what is it worth it to risk the lives of every single person in the group to get Maggie to the doctor for this situation? And again, I have no idea.
Yeah, and like the RV is not exactly like an inconspicuous vehicle. Like, could you like have one of those sedans? And can you like lease out a sedan to Abraham? And Abraham and Sasha, sure. If you want Sasha to go because they're a package deal, that's fine. Abraham, Sasha, and Maggie, you guys go to the hilltop. Rick, stay at home. Protect the base. Protect the base. Yeah. You know, that would be something else, you know, but it's everybody goes. Is
just the fact that they brought Carl on this mission also. I mean, I think that tonight, that did seem to me to be the most unforgivable thing. I mean, you saw Rick have these encounters with the different people from the Saviors. And boy, Rick did seem super calm for, you know, dealing with a bunch of people who were holding guns at pointing them at his kid and saying, you know, that was a very civil conversation that was held each time they got to one of those roadblocks between the Saviors and Rick's group.
The last day on Earth talk.
Last day on Earth talk. You know, you're sitting there. There's Carl with one eye standing there, and he's not even like, Carl, get back in the van. Right. You know, he did not seem super concerned about it. Rick was talking a big game still at that point. Like, Carl could have, you know, he could have lost Carl like that in that moment. And who knows? It could be Carl that he loses from Negan.
No, I think you can rule out Carl, because Negan says something to the effect of like, if anybody moves, if anybody does anything, you guys can scream, you can cry, but if anybody moves, we're gonna cut out the kid's other eye and feed it to him and make you watch, or something like that. So Carl's like the only person that just knee jerk you can say, I think Carl is not getting killed here.
Yeah, you could say that, I guess. But who knows? Who knows? you never know. But anyway, so lots of questionable decisions being made. Let's talk, you know, let's change the tone a little bit. Let's talk about some of the really good things from the episode. I feel like that the Carol and Morgan stuff overall was pretty strong. I thought that maybe some of the stuff between Carol and the Savior who was shooting her might have been a little heavy-handed. But overall, I do feel like the solo scenes between Carol and Morgan were some of the high points of the episode.
Wasn't it great when the Savior was like shooting Carol in the arm and then the leg, and Carol was just like laughing like, it tickles. Don't you know who you are dealing with? I am Carol. This does not hurt me.
Yeah,
I'm the best.
She really took it like a champ.
Yeah, she's just like, oh, this is fun.
She's laughing.
I get to die. She's like, I get to die soon. Hooray.
Yeah.
Yeah, she really had a very serious death wish, it seems. It was very intense stuff. It was great to see, you know, the Carol and Morgan story kind of come full circle. Nice to know that those two characters are safe, at least for right now. You know, it's good when we can actually account for some of these people. Like, we don't have to worry about Carol anymore until the show comes back. I thought that the scene with Morgan and Morgan being forced to use Chekhov's gun, the gun that he was handed by Rick last week, it's cool that that went off this week and Morgan broke his no killing policy. I think that even Morgan's probably going to be upset about it because he's Morgan, but that guy should not lose any sleep over what he did. He saved a friend. He killed to protect somebody he cared about. I think this one is kosher. I think he didn't have another move. He was not within striking distance with his Eastman stick.
Yes, I also think that it's a little bit of a cheat what they've done with some of these characters that they sort of want to keep out of the fray of being like, you say like, oh, this person's just a cold-blooded killer. But you had another character where it's like, well, I'm definitely dying soon. I want to watch you die first, but I have a death sentence. The same way with that woman who had the lung cancer back there. That was the woman that Maggie killed in that episode. I think sometimes like if you have a character where they have some sort of terminal illness where they have a death sentence already, look for a person who is not normally thought of as a killer on The Walking Dead to be the person to take them out, because they were going to die anyway. They just sort of accelerated the timetable.
Yeah, it makes things a little easier, a little more palatable.
An easier pill to swallow instead of a hard pill to swallow like Negan had.
Sure. But yeah, it was, I wonder where it takes Morgan now. I mean, Morgan, he's immediately interacting with these two guys who show up at the end of the episode, or at the end of their storyline at least, and is having a pretty calm, rational, reasonable conversation with them. So I don't think that the descent into madness that Morgan's probably deeply afraid of killing somebody would cause, I don't think we're on the verge of that. But if this has opened up the door for Morgan to like justify killing people again, maybe we could get there. You know, maybe we could go full clear again with Morgan, and that could be an interesting direction for the character.
Well, I think that Carol sort of really exposed the flaw in the Morgan doctrine of all life is precious. Don't kill anybody. And what Carol says to Morgan is that in order to love somebody, you either have to be willing to kill or to not kill and to lose what you love. And for Morgan, it was always very easy to just like, oh no, just let everything live. And then whatever happens, happens. But now right. For the first time, Morgan cares about people and cares about Carol. And so he had to break his, you know, sort of like pie in the sky sort of doctrine about how all the life is precious. And because he cared about Carol, that's why he had to break. It wasn't so easy all of a sudden to say all life is precious. I have to let this man live. I had to kill him because I cared about Carol. It complicated it.
It's very complicated. You know, I think it's been challenged. His philosophy has been challenged. And it's something that you and I have talked about a lot here on this show, where is that one of the themes of the season? Like, can you find some space between Rick Grimes and Morgan Jones that makes sense? Is there a way to still have a bit, at least like, and maybe not even a small slice of Morgan's philosophy, a very healthy, hefty chunk of Morgan's philosophy of let's not kill unless we absolutely have to? Like, could that be the rule? Could that be it going forward? Does it not like, do we not just like have to like pop somebody in the head immediately? Can we not do that? But can we also not just like very kind of ignorantly believe and naively believe that we can get away in this world and not have to shoot somebody in self-defense every now and then? And I think Morgan being the person stepping in that direction, you know, stepping away from his own hard stance on the issue. That's interesting. You know, I kind of thought that Carol, and I think that Carol still to an extent was, you know, kind of the avatar of that idea, the avatar of that tug of war and the person who's going to find that moral gray. But I think what she really ended up being, at least in this episode, was the catalyst to push Morgan in that direction of Morgan himself finding the new way. You know, it's not full Eastman. It's not what Eastman would, you know, it's not what Eastman would condone. But Eastman lived a very private existence where he didn't have to deal with these challenges very often. Morgan is living in this society with Alexandria, and he has to make these types of choices. And I think that this is a good step in the right direction if he can keep his stability together. I think this is the right way to go for him.
And Eastman had already lost everything that he had cared about. And that's when he found this philosophy, and that was sort of what saved him. Had somebody tried to kill Tabitha the goat, you wonder if push came to shove, what would Eastman have done?
Yeah, you're not going to touch Tabitha, not on his watch, except for that walker who like completely devoured Tabitha while Eastman was like 2 seconds away.
I have to say,
you know, he was infected.
One very frustrating part of the Morgan story, though, when he had to go climb that tower to go kill the walker that had hung himself. Right. I'm just like, Morgan, what are you doing?
Yeah, I saw a lot of people online reacting to that, like, great job, Morgan. Kill the walker that literally cannot walk right now.
Yes.
Just like go out of your way, risk falling from that thing and breaking your neck.
Yeah.
It seemed like the juice was not worth the squeeze on that
one. Yeah, he was ruining Morgan's inner zen and making too much noise. All right, Josh, anything else? Any other headlines from this episode that you want to get into before we take some questions?
Headlines from this episode? No, I mean, you know, it's a 90 minute finale. A lot of people, I think, are, you know, questioning the choice to have does it have to be 90 minutes? And we've talked about that with a lot of these 90 minute episodes of the show. Do you feel like the story of the episode justified 90 minutes of screen time, or could this have been a story that was told in 60 minutes, traditional hour long episode?
Well, I think we probably could have gotten it down to 75 for sure. You know, take a couple of those roadblocks out of the way. You know, maybe they get stopped by Negan's group, you know, 3 times instead of 5 times or something like that. Right. You know, I think that we could have definitely cut it down. I don't mind the added runtime. Did other people want to make sure they didn't miss any of WrestleMania? Were people complaining about the runtime?
Probably. I think that, you know, when you go back and you look at like the length of the commercials versus the lengths of the acts, it's probably not skewed in the favor that you want. Like, I think they were pretty long commercial breaks there. Like, that commercial break with Alison Brie and Jamie Lannister is the longest commercial ever. That commercial is like a sitcom length commercial. It's really long. Yeah. That happened at least once, maybe twice.
Well, what are you going to do? You know, yeah. I don't know if they're charging the same ad dollars when Fear the Walking Dead comes back. So, you know, right. Get in while you can.
How about that Flying Dead finale? What did you think of the last episode of the Flying Dead? Nick, it was a Nick comeback.
Yeah. Who knew? Well, it was like, you know, the whole time we had already seen the finale of the Walking Dead webisode. It was right before our eyes.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's like dropping the Kobayashi mug and realizing you were talking to Kaiser Soze the whole time.
Yeah. We didn't even realize that we had seen the whole thing.
Yeah. Amazing.
We already saw the last scene of the movie.
Yeah. It's really great. It's almost like The Flying Dead was a complete waste of time.
No. How dare you, Josh? How dare you? Sorry. What, do you have a problem with webisodes?
Yeah. I apologize to you Flying Dead fans.
Okay.
I don't mean to be such a negative Nancy about it, or a negative Negan.
Negative Negan. Yeah. All right. You want to get into some of these questions, and then anything else that we don't cover, we will go ahead and get to in our Walking Dead feedback show. No need to update the death draft.
No, no, I think the death draft still stands. I will need a reminder of who we have in the death draft, but I'm sure we can go back and we can figure that out.
Yeah, boy. And where's Tara?
Where is Tara? She's on the road.
She's on the road, too.
Tara and Heath are having, you know, like a buddy comedy somewhere. Maybe that's going to be episode 3. You know, the first episode is Father Gabriel. Second episode is Carol and Morgan. Third episode is Tara and Heath. Fourth is Tabitha the goat fast.
Bye. This is probably for the feedback show. Wait, let me ask it anyway. Who is the most unsatisfying person? It could be out of the the Negan Nine. What? Who are the people?
Yeah,
there?
I don't know how many people there were. Who would be the least satisfying? Jared,
get us a head count on and a head count before the Negan swing. Who would be the least satisfying?
I don't know. Like, is there like a really unimportant character? Probably Aaron. Aaron would be a real bummer. I would be very mad if they killed Aaron, you know, not just because that's, you know, the character with the least weight on the show because we just know him the least of everybody. But I think that Aaron's a good character and that'd be a crummy way for him to go. I think Rosita's got to be on that list as well.
Yeah, she's like, too.
If it's Rosita, then it's like, meh, all right.
Yeah.
See you, Rosita. That sucks.
Yeah. But
what are you going to do?
Okay. All right. We'll do the power rankings.
I think let's give it the night, and then, you know, later in the week when we do the feedback show, we'll come in hot with our takes on who is very likely to be this person, who is unlikely to be the person that Negan killed. Looking forward to the feedback show this week. I think it's going to be a good one.
Okay. All right. So let's take some of the questions. Why don't we start it off here with Emily Stobbs.
Okay. Emily Stobbs writes in, if you had to make a lucky guess right now on who you think Lucille took out, who do you think kicked the bucket? All right, so let's just do like a quick gun to the head. I think that based on, I think that you have to take into account who was prominent in this episode. I think that matters a ton.
Who had the boot edit?
Who had the boot edit? And for me, it's down to two people. I think it's either Abraham or Eugene.
I agree completely. And I feel like that Eugene definitely had the boot edit, but I think that you could spin the Eugene boot edit into the Abraham was saying goodbye to him. Because right. I think that scene where Abraham and Sasha were talking about how he's ready to go and do this. I thought Abraham was very forward with Sasha. I mean, they haven't even gone on a date yet.
We haven't even really seen them kiss or make out or anything, right. I don't think.
Like, I wanna, you know, take you behind the middle school and get you pregnant. Boy.
Yeah, get to first base first, man.
Jeez,
come on.
You're really putting the cart before the horse there, Abraham.
Yeah, like, really.
Sasha should have slapped him.
Laying it out there, Sasha would be like, no!
Like, let's see if you get there, Abraham.
Yeah, play your cards right and maybe we'll talk about it.
Maybe.
Yeah, but I think that scene where he's saying to her, like, I think that we could do something bigger. Like, are you up for doing something bigger in life, like what Maggie and Glenn are doing? I think the fact that he has that scene and that Abraham is in such a happy place with his life and with Sasha for him to even be thinking about that stuff makes him a ripe candidate to be getting his brains bashed in by Negan.
Yeah, and how about that? And he's like, yeah, I mean, like right now. Like, whoa, slow down, Abraham. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, back it up. Back up that RV.
Yeah, back up that RV. Totally.
Yeah. So this is from Spicy Wasabi X. Could it be possible the producers don't know yet who they want to kill off? Anything
contract is negotiate. All right, who's willing to take less money?
Yeah. All things are possible. I actually was thinking about this a little bit in the, you know, the few minutes after the episode ended of like, is it possible that they withheld the identity of who got killed here because they're like going to gauge fan reaction. You know, is that at all in the cards? It seems unrealistic. Like they would have to lock everybody in for
kind of a focus group.
Yeah. If they're like, so what does Twitter think? Like, who do they think should die? Like, what would be good? What would be a good story?
Check out the stats from Walking Dead's story sync. See what people said.
What did the polls say? Check the polls.
Would it be tactically right and immoral if we killed Sasha?
Yeah. Immoral. Yeah, I don't know. I think they have to know, right? Like, you got to imagine they know at this point. The way that Walking Dead is filmed, you know, they're going to start shooting. If they haven't already started shooting season 7, they're going to start fairly soon. You know, they go to Comic-Con in July with a season 7 trailer. You know, they come into Comic-Con with a trailer for the next season, and it's a good long look at what to expect. Mm-hmm. So by that point, they are, you know, they have filmed a lot. Another thing too is like they film most of their season before the season starts airing. Like Morgan with the horse. I'd been waiting for Morgan to be on a horse for a very long time because there were promotional photos or clips or something of Morgan on horseback as soon as
you mean in this poster behind me?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly in that poster behind you. As early as, you know, December or so, you know, a while. So they filmed this stuff way out in advance. So they have to know. They have to know because they're charting that story. And so whoever got killed, they know. We don't. It's a bummer.
Yeah. Now, Josh, how about if I would have told you earlier tonight that we were going to spend exactly 0 seconds resolving the Daryl got shot in the end of the last episode storyline?
Yeah, surprised.
Absolutely no, well, 1 second of on-screen time was, you know, did Daryl even have a line in the episode tonight?
Not that I can recall. You know, we see him, like, we see, you know, that weird funky shot of the people inside the car. You know, looking through light through the car doors, and then finally it opens up and you realize, oh, it's all the people that got caught before. And Daryl is there. He's been shot. He's been shot in the arm. He seems like he's not doing fantastic. But otherwise, you know, there's no addressing it whatsoever. I think on further reflection, an already bungus cliffhanger just looks so much worse. You know, it's really, it's funky.
Also, we had a promo, I believe, the first time that I've seen during The Walking Dead for Ride with Norman Reedus coming to AMC this June, probably to coincide with the finale of Fear the Walking Dead. First off, Josh, what are you doing Sunday nights? Is this, are you ready to podcast it up?
Well, I don't know if we're going to be doing Fear of the Walking Dead live on Sunday nights.
I know that, but that doesn't mean we're not doing Ride with Norman Reedus live.
But we will be doing Ride with Norman Reedus live.
Yes. Yes.
That will be our next post-show recap.
But how do you think that that factors into Daryl's job security on The Walking Dead?
You know, I have been saying on this
mutually podcast, exclusive.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it could be like AMC is like giving him something cool to do because they want to keep Norman Reedus in the family. And like they already like they killed him off. He's not going to be on Walking Dead. So let's give him a motorcycle show. Or it could just be we love the Norman Reedus thing. So why not have him, you know, do this motorcycle show on top of Walking Dead? I don't think you can read too much into it. I've said for a long time that I feel like if the Walking Dead wants to prove that nobody is safe, like Daryl Dixon's the guy you kill. So I've been thinking about Daryl Dixon as a person to get Lucille'd for a while. He is not high on my suspect list right now just because there was none of him in this episode pretty much.
So you say the fact that Norman Reedus has the new show, don't Norman Reed us too much into it.
I'm not sighing because I'm disappointed. I'm sighing because I'm in awe of your genius. I am awash in your genius right now.
Don't Norman Josh us too much into it.
No, that's not funny. That's not funny.
Not anymore. Take it off the table. All right, let's go back to the questions. All right, here we go. How about this one? Smit Dog Trill says, question of the day. Do you believe AMC wants us to assume Daryl dies because of the commercial for his new show and the fact he was on Talking Dead? I believe he killed Carl because he was talking about ripping the other eye out first. If anyone got it. So basically, Norman Reedus being on the Talking Dead, did that do anything for you? Or is that just sort of like now it's synergy anytime they have him on?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of synergy. I think that also because he was the character who was in peril last week, saying that he is going to be on The Talking Dead tonight kind of makes you nervous. Like, could Daryl die tonight? So I think a lot of it was that. Daryl Dixon, you know, Norman Reedus as an actor is also just a great ambassador for that show. He's the fan favorite character. He's one of the most recognizable faces on that show, if not the most recognizable face on the show. And he's funny. You know, he's good TV. He's good for a talk show. So I think having him on, you know, I think that that panel of Gimple, Reedus and Kirkman, which and plus Jeffrey Dean Morgan, that's a really solid lineup for a Talking Dead finale edition.
Pretty good. Well, I'll be the judge of that. We'll see.
I know you will be, super fan.
But I do feel like that the show on AMC, I think that's more, and also the fact that we had Norman Reedus on The Talking Dead tonight, I feel like that he has immunity. I think he's safe.
Yes.
Cross him off the list.
You think Daryl is good?
I think Daryl is fine. I don't think you shoot Daryl in the last episode, put him on The Talking Dead tonight. He has his own show on AMC. The show on AMC, to me, seems like a move like, okay, let's tie you up. Let's renegotiate your contract. Okay, yeah. Let's get Daryl, you know, sign you on for two more years. And then also in the contract, we'll give you your own show on AMC.
Right.
I think that if he's leaving The Walking Dead, I think he's going off and doing movies, doing other stuff. He's not going to be tied to doing a show on AMC, I don't think.
Sure.
That's my amateur take on that.
Okay. I like your amateur take. I think it's a good take.
All right. How about To the Washroom?
All right, let's go to The Washroom. The Washroom says, one more reason that this is a bad idea. How are they going to advertise for the next season? As soon as they show a character in trailer footage, it eliminates them from the Lucille draft. So are we in for vague teasers until September? Washroom, I believe you did just answer your question. I think that we're in for vague teasers.
No, cut to Comic-Con this July. It's like, all right, we're going to show you an exclusive scene from Walking Dead season 7. And it's like Father Gabriel, like, you see anything, Spencer? Spencer, you see anything? I think I heard gunshots.
Hey, Spencer, my new best friend. What happened? What's going on out there? Yeah. It's going to be like all of the trailers are going to be very heavy on the Father Gabriel and Spencer footage.
And Judith.
Lots of Judith. Lots of Judith. A little bit of Morgan and Carol. And then just like gratuitous shots of the lineup again. And that's it.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And Tara. Tara and is going to be coming
and
back.
Heath.
Yeah. All right. Matthew Cody says, I wonder if the premiere will show the perspective of Glenn, Daryl, Michonne, and Rosita and where the finale ended with one of them getting the bet. That would be more impactful. Oh, so maybe the first episode of season 7 is the perspective of what was going on in this episode from the POV of Daryl and Michonne and Glenn, because we didn't see what happened to them and Rosita. We didn't see what happened to them from when Daryl got shot. There was like, you know, how much time passed, we could see their whole perspective of these events.
I think that that's a really good call. I can really see that. I think that that opens up the playing field quite a bit. I think that, you know, it stretches out the reveal so that, you know, that bat lands at the end of an episode rather than it being like the first thing that you see on the show. I think that there is a lot to that. And I think that that immunity necklace you just put around Daryl Dixon's neck, I would hold off on that for a minute. I think that's a really good call.
Well, then we can cut to the black at the end of that episode, then do the Negan backstory episode.
Oh!
90-minute Negan backstory episode. Don't you want to see how Negan started the Saviors?
Oh, man. Remember that time when we were doing a post-show recap about Game of Thrones and there was an earthquake in Los Angeles live on the air? I'm about to do something unprecedented and puke on the air. Like, that's just like really awful.
How about, is it Pee Pants City yet?
I can't wait till next season when we get to Pee Pants City. This week's book club is going to be dedicated to really unpacking what we can expect from Pee Pants City. Really great storyline in the comics.
Okay. All right. What about our Philly?
Our Philly says, can we stop for a second and recognize how very difficult it is to do a 3-point turn in a Winnebago on a 2-lane country road? Abraham did some damn fine driving right there.
Yeah, didn't he?
Yeah. Credit where it's due. He didn't have to ford the river. He was able to just...
you have to caulk the wagon?
Yeah, he didn't have to caulk the wagon or Abraham ford the river. He was good. He was good. I adored this episode's use of the Winnebago. I really can't say enough about it. Like how pretty much like every other act and sometimes multiple acts in a row just ended with the Winnebago just like slowly rolling away. was like, it was really, it sits well in my happy place. I was very thrilled with that.
Right. It was not sort of like a Fast and Furious move where it was like, Abrams like, all right, let me just go. All right. Let me just turn this thing around. Let me get the hell out of here. All right. Do I got enough room? I got enough room back there. I got enough room. I hit a tree. All right.
You hit a tree. Oh man, you shattered the windshield. Oh God, Abraham again. Busted taillight.
What was the plan that Eugene was going to do?
Eugene was going to distract them, I think, right? Like, he was going to drive the vehicle, and everyone was going to be like, all the savers are going to be like, oh, there's the vehicle. It was the suicide play,
like,
essentially.
Eugene was just going to go off like Thelma Louise, or like driving like the General Lee, like so they would go chase Eugene?
Yeah, and they were going to take that opportunity to get to the hilltop on foot.
Okay.
That was the plan. That's where they got. That's where they were. You know, and that's a suicide play for Eugene. Like, Eugene is accepting, like, I'm willing to do this. Here's how you make the bullets, Rick. You can do this on your own. I'm willing to go there. So at that point, once they're all lined up with the baseball bat and Negan's, like, having a hard time deciding who to kill, don't you think this is the point where, if not Eugene himself, Rick's like, how about Eugene? How about you kill Eugene? Eugene's ready to go.
And considering that Eugene was on a suicide mission, how did he get captured?
I don't know, because they didn't want him dead yet. They wanted to, I don't know.
Yeah, I get
him. They're like, your hair is cool.
They might not want Eugene dead, but when Eugene is on some sort of kamikaze mission.
Oh, well, I'm not saying that, like, Eugene is going to, like, drive the van straight into, like, an oil tanker and blow himself up and take all of the saviors down with him. I think he's doing this thing knowing that the most likely outcome is he gets caught and killed. You know, I'm not saying that, like, he's planning on, like, I'll just throw myself into harm's way.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Meh.
All right. Haiku Fishback says, can we just give a round of applause of how great Jeffrey Dean Morgan was? Yep. Yeah, bravo. Yeah. We welcome addition to Walking Dead.
He's great. He's great. And Negan as a character is a great character. And he really accelerates the action of the story in the comics in a really awesome, 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 awesome way. I'm very excited to have Negan on the show. I'm very excited to have a great actor like Jeffrey Dean Morgan playing him. I'm very optimistic about what they can do with that character on the show now that he's here. Not so optimistic about how they chose to end his introduction scene.
They just neutered his entrance.
Yeah, it's not Negan's fault.
Yeah, okay.
They neutered Negan.
Michael Rajpal, how is ammunition scarce? It's America. Okay, well, that's a little... again, zombie apocalypse.
It's America.
America.
Yeah. Okay. Alex Kidwell says, biggest modern TV cliffhanger, Walking Dead Season 6, Game of Thrones Season 5, who shot Mr. Burns, or who is the father of Eric Cartman?
You know, the Eric Cartman thing, we talked about that with the Glenn business back in the fall. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is this a bigger cliffhanger than the Game of Thrones thing?
I think, like, the emotional impact of this cliffhanger is not far away from the emotional impact of when the resolution to Eric Cartman's father reveal was just a Terrence and Phillip episode.
Yeah.
Like, I think that those two things, like, this cliffhanger does feel like Terrence and Phillip farting in your face.
Okay. All right. Let's check in with some of the Twitter questions also. Brad asked TV wants to know, shouldn't Negan kill the leaders, Josh? That would leave them more vulnerable and more likely to follow him. Do you cut off the head of the snake?
If you cut off the head of the snake, do you kill the snake, or have you just, you know, created a martyr? You know, like, do you, like, now does everybody rally around, like, well, Rick's gone, we got to do what Rick wanted us to do? Like, does that make them more powerful by killing off Rick? Or do you neuter Rick and you make Rick look like a loser and somebody who's incapable of keeping his people safe, and now everybody falls in line? Like, if you can make Rick Grimes, the guy who bit a throat out to save his son, the guy who screwed up all of these Terminus people, the guy who's done so much for these people, if you can make that guy pale as a ghost, shaking in his boots, and you can turn him into, you know, your slave moving forward, that's probably an even more powerful statement than just choosing him to beat to death with a baseball bat.
Okay. Emily Stobbs, now that Morgan broke his code, will his character change in season 7?
Hope so. I mean, I think that there's, you know, as we talked about already, I think that there are really cool directions that they can go with Morgan now that he has moved away, or at least momentarily moved away from the Eastman thing. I think that there's some cool things that they can do. So I hope so. That'd be awesome.
All right. Anything else you want to address tonight, Josh?
One last question from Sir Wumpy Flump the Third. Do you think a dumpster got in the way of Lucille and all of our characters are safe?
That wasn't the same dumpster that Carol was at that Glenn and Nick were at, right?
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
I don't think so. No, you know, we're going to talk about this episode a lot this week. I was disappointed, as many people were. I wish that that had not been what we got, but what are you going to do? That's okay. What we got.
I know there's so many more questions that you guys have tonight that we will be back to answer them midweek when we take your questions on our Walking Dead feedback show. Of course, TWD at Postshow Recaps or the postshowrecaps.com/voicemail. All right, Josh, what's the hashtag tonight?
I had Cookie Patrol earlier.
Yes.
I had Negative Negan.
That's what I like.
Yeah. When you want to do that?
Let's do Negative Negan.
Sure.
Don't be a Negative Negan, everybody, about this episode. This too shall pass. We'll get over it.
Life's too short.
Life's too short. With Josh and Jessica, will Jay and Jay, will talk about it on the book club. That's coming up.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when we'll record. It'll either be Monday night or Tuesday night, but if you've got questions for that, get them in quick, TWD at PostShowRecaps.com or PostShowRecaps.com/feedback, and just mark spoiler in the headline, in the subject line, and we will know that it's for a book club. But get those in fast if you can.
All right, and then, of course, we will be back with the voicemail show later on this week, plus Better Call Saul recaps. Josh, did you guys finish up the Daredevil?
We recorded our final Daredevil podcast today. That will be coming out. The final three Daredevil podcasts will be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. I shall not say anything about how I felt about it, other than to say I liked it more than I liked this episode of The Walking Dead, at the very least.
Right. So somewhere in between this...
Not so good.
Okay.
And potentially very good.
Well, what are the Batman versus Superman? What are you, that or this episode of The Walking Dead?
Oh, come on, stop it. I don't want to get in trouble.
Okay.
I don't want to get in trouble.
Of course, also this
Batman
weekend...
Batman vs. Superman didn't have enough RVs going in reverse.
That's right.
So this wins.
Also, that's how Superman turns the Earth backwards, that he gets enough RVs to all go in reverse. Like, back it up, Abraham. We're going to turn the Earth back in time and leave Alexandria.
Superman's a really good driver, too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really then, good at that 3-point turn.
Also this weekend I talked about the great Tyrion Lannister, Peter Dinklage, on SNL.
Yeah, I gotta check that out.
Talked about that. All right, so lots of good stuff. Thanks so much to Alex Kidwell behind the scenes. Great
Alex,
job.
You're the best.
Great job on the back half of the season 6 of the feedback shows, or on the live shows. Thanks all you guys. Subscribe to Post Show Recaps. Go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes or on YouTube at postshowrecaps.com/YouTube. Anything else, Josh?
Nope, that's it.
Follow at Round Howard on Twitter. I'm at Rob Sestrino. Have a great night. Looking forward to reading your comments on postshowrecaps.com. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.